Welcome back in. Third hour of Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Elijah Campbell here with you on this Tuesday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. And we are pleased to go to our 102.5 The Game phone line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com and welcome in our good friend Gentry Estes from the Tennessee. And Gentry, what's going on, brother? How are we doing?
Hey, I'm good. Good morning. Good to be with you guys.
Good to have you with us. And Gentry, we've talked a lot in the last couple of weeks about Julio Jones and the possibility that he could end up with the Tennessee Titans, and Mike Florio over the weekend coming out saying the general's, you know, kind of feeling around the league is right now is that he ends up with the Titans. Obviously, nobody knows yet for sure at this point. What do you think of all this? And if you're the Titans, what are you comfortable parting ways with in order to acquire the services of Julio Jones?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's kind of the big question, because the meat to what Florio reported was that the Titans were going to end up trading a second-round pick eventually. That was the word he used, was eventually. I thought that was interesting because this seemed to me like the Falcons are trying to up the price. They're advertising and saying to other teams, okay, if you can do better than that, you can get Julio Jones. I mean, I don't know what the market looks like for Julio Jones in terms of a first-round pick or how much interest you're getting from other teams. Good as he is, you're still talking about a receiver in his early 30s who makes a ton of money, has a history of injuries here recently. So you could see where, you know, maybe you don't get a first-round pick for that. So when you're with the Titans, I've always thought with this, they're in an interesting position with the Falcons just because of how well the Falcons staff knows the Titans team. There would be some avenues there in terms of, you know, hey, maybe Dean Pease wants Rashawn Evans. Maybe Arthur Smith has a few guys on the offense that we don't know about that he really likes. That could be added to this where the Titans could maybe send some salary back and also sweeten the deal for the Falcons. Maybe in a way some other teams couldn't, but I think the next few days are going to be really interesting in terms of how the rest of the league feels about this, because it does appear that the Titans are interested, but I don't think they're going to pay up for it.
So, And judging from your writing, you're pretty bullish on this as an idea for the Titans, Gentry. But I guess where would you draw the line in terms of willingness, you know, to give up this or that, and also the idea of maybe, you know, giving up more if they'll take on some of that contract?
Yeah, the big concern for me was the money, and I think that's probably pretty widespread around the NFL right now. You're asking teams in a reduced cap situation to take on all this money that they weren't planning to otherwise. And you know, teams have really, including the Titans, really been struggling and trying to make moves to create cap space this whole time, you know, parting ways with some players they probably wouldn't have otherwise. So now you're asking teams to accelerate that process. The question for me was what the Titans would even be interested. Was that going to be a non-starter for them? And the fact that they continue to be mentioned in all these reports about Julio, there does appear to be some interest. You know, it wasn't a non-starter. So that, however it works out with the money, there appears to be a sense that the Titans can do it. And if they can do it, then I think now you figure out what the best option is. I tend to think if you look at, let's say, how the Jadeveon Clowney situation played out last year, the Titans were interested for months, but they weren't going to chase him. The market eventually came to where they wanted it to be. They ended up paying Jadeveon too much for the production, obviously, but they got him on a one-year deal. They got him on the terms they wanted. And I tend to think this would be similar. And to me, I wouldn't give up a first-round pick for Julio. Second round sounds a little bit right, but there needs to be some other issue. There needs to be some other parts of that deal that ease the salary cap hit, and I think there would be.
Gentry Estes from the Tennessee and on the line with us, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. And Gentry, I mean, that brings up, you know, another part of this conversation too is the tight end position for the Titans as well, with, you know, all this hoopla around Julio Jones. Right now, you've got Anthony Firkser at tight end and Jeff Swaim, and that's pretty much it in terms of proven guys that you feel good about. What do you think of how the Titans are going to go about handling the tight end position from here, and how much would that factor into this discussion of Julio Jones and the money that comes along with that as well?
Well, I was about to say, I mean, if someone would have said for weeks, you know, the Titans are going to make a trade with the Falcons, I would have been like, oh yeah, for Hayden Hurst.
Yeah,
you know, that makes a lot of sense, really, to bring him in, given who the Falcons drafted with Pitts. But I, you know, gosh, the Titans are going to have to do something, aren't they? I mean, you know, are you really comfortable with Anthony Firkser as your number one tight end? That's nothing against Anthony Firkser. The guy was really productive the last couple of years. Certainly, you know, great value for the team. But that's – you're talking about an offense that's leaned a lot on the tight ends here the last couple of years, and that's a pretty glaring need. As you exit the draft, I think, you know, the Titans had a good draft class, but that was – Needed a tight end and didn't get one. That's still a real problem.
No doubt. So, Gentry, we've been talking some about the Preds here in the aftermath of the 4-2 loss to the Hurricanes, what may be coming here, the expansion draft, who needs to be re-signed, extended, cut, traded. If you're waving a magic wand to get this team to actual contention anytime soon, what would you do?
I would have Seattle take Johansson or Duchesne in the expansion draft.
Yes. Which one?
and free up the cap space. And then, you know, I just feel like everybody, we talked rebuild this whole season. And I think, you know, even if some wheels started moving in that direction, that's still your big hurdle is some of the contracts you're dealing with, these long-term deals, those $8 million deals with those two guys. And, until you find a solution for that, I mean, you're going to really be hamstrung by that as the cap stays flat in the NHL, I think.
So, Ginger, with that in mind, as you look at this run for the Predators, I mean, they win 20 of 28 to close out the regular season. A really good team, obviously, in Carolina in the first round of the playoffs. They take them six games. Four of those games go into overtime. Like, how do you kind of evaluate this season if you're David Poile and the Predators, given the really bad, basically rock bottom that we saw halfway through, and then the run to close out the end where Saros is playing out of his mind, and you give a really good run to a Carolina team that could still do some damage in the playoffs. I mean, how do you kind of evaluate whether or not this season was a success and how close you are if you're David Poile and the Predators?
Yeah, I mean, it's a good question. I do think that the Predators played awfully well in the playoffs against a very good team. You know, I think a lot of how that played out, you give credit to the other guys. I mean, you know, my gosh, I think what the Canes had 10 game-tying goals in those six games.
Yeah.
It seemed like every time the Preds inched ahead or got any kind of advantage, you know, Carolina nullified it or caught them almost immediately in some cases. And that was a team – I was impressed with Carolina. That was a team that continued to step up and showed their own resiliency, which has been – was a thing – I think a strength for Nashville all season. But, you know, it goes back to this, though. This is a team that, you know, almost won the Stanley Cup, but then after that won the President's Trophy. There was an elite team, a team that had established itself at that point in its progression in the NHL. Now, in the last few years, the Predators have gone from a team that's capable of having the best record in the league to a team that, you know, everybody sure is happy about their effort in losing in the first round. And it just seemed the whole time Carolina was a better team. But, you go into that saying, you know, Nashville is such underdogs, and it's like, oh, a moral victory. And you've just sensed a regression in the franchise, and it's continued to do that, to go that way. And you know, as good as the end of this season was, it was needed because of how bad it was for a couple of months. And I just feel like it's hard. I feel like they're headed in the wrong direction still, only because of where they were to where they are now.
Talking to Gentry Estes, great columnist for the Tennessean. And Gentry, I ask you this because I'm struggling with this right now. How are you dividing up the Nashville Regional, the Knoxville Regional? Pretty crazy that we're talking about a number three national seed, number four national seed in the same state, rivals, Vanderbilt and Tennessee. And also, what do you think about both teams' chances of getting to Omaha?
Yeah, that's going to be fun to divide that up there, Joe. Are you going to go to Omaha for about 10 days when they both go?
Definitely not that. Oh, gosh, if they both, though. Oh, man, if they both go.
You'll be there.
Oh, boy. Well, I was going to go later.
We're the center of college baseball all of a sudden, I guess. I think Vanderbilt is as good as they usually are, I think, with those two pitchers. I think it would be a pretty big upset for anybody to knock them out in any super regional having to face those two guys the first 2 days. I think they're maybe not as complete as they've been in past years, but awfully good and good enough to go to Omaha. With Tennessee, it's a very good team. They're a clutch team. They always seem to produce, you know, in situations, these dramatic victories, and they've really got the fan base behind them over there. I mean, it'll be interesting to see, because I think Vanderbilt is the type of team that is used to this and knows how to play at this time of year and will be very composed. And, you know, it's kind of the norm for that program. But at Tennessee, it's not at all. And it'll be interesting to see how that goes, where, you know, this is a team that doesn't really know what it doesn't have a lot of experience this time of year in their program here for a number of years. And, I think there'll be more excitement probably around that team because of that. But I think you maybe know a little bit better what to expect with Vandy.
Gentry Estes from the Tennessean has been our guest here on Robbie and Rexrow. Does a great job for the Tennessean, covering all things Middle Tennessee sports here in our area. Gentry, great stuff as always, man. Appreciate you taking time to come on with us this morning.
You bet. Take care, guys.
Absolutely. Yeah. We'll come back, react a little bit to what Gentry had to say there, get back into the Tennessee Titans as well. All that coming up next. This is Robbie and Rexrow here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.